Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable high-speed internet. For our first episode, I am delighted to welcome Ernesto Falcone, Senior Legislative Counsel at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Ernesto and I discuss the need for nationwide fiber infrastructure in the United States and what's holding that up, what to expect from the incoming Biden administration on the broadband front, and what the pandemic has revealed about broadband policy in the U.S. Ernesto, thank you so much for joining me. It's really great to speak with you.
It's great to be here.
So you published a piece at the end of 2020 about the U.S. being starved of its broadband potential, pointing out a series of arguments that EFF has made about the need for a universal fiber infrastructure plan. So I'm wondering if you can share a bit about EFF's perspective on why universal fiber is important to closing the digital divide and what you think is standing in the way of a robust fiber build in the U.S. specifically compared to other countries where we've seen it kind of more of a focus.
So the Electronic Frontier Foundation, we're a public interest law firm that have been around for 30 years. You know, we started at the kind of the advent of the commercial internet for most people. In fact, the founders of EFF, some of them who built their own ISPs back in the 90s, were really kind of the early technologists and leaders in the space. And, you know, you fast forward to today, we're a group of lawyers and engineers that work on these issues of speech, privacy, innovation, and, you know, basically ensuring that your rights and abilities to participate in society are preserved or enhanced as technology grows. In the context of speech, you know, it's ensuring that your freedom of speech rights are protected in the forums that are available to you today. In terms of privacy, issues like surveillance. And ensuring that the government doesn't know more than it's entitled to, you know, under your Fourth Amendment rights, especially as surveillance has become so pervasive. In the broadband access context, it really boils down to the fact that if you are not connected to a 21st century ready connection today, you are not participating in society to your fullest. Healthcare, education, remote work, you know, all these things that we're kind of thrown into, right, are contingent on what your infrastructure is at home, you know, the connectivity you have. And if it's less than adequate, you're irreparably harmed. You know, I think you're seeing this mostly in a very consequential space in the education area.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, a handful of years ago, EFF tasked me and a few of other of my colleagues to really dig into what needs to be done to get what is the 21st century internet? What does it look like for everyone? What are the mistakes of the past that have denied us getting there today? And how can we learn from them? And we concluded that fiber to the home, fiber infrastructure is the universal 21st century medium. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been proven right since we've concluded that about 2 years ago.
Okay. And what would you say is standing in the way of the U.S. Committing to a full fiber infrastructure?
So it's because there's a whole bunch of slow internet monopolists that exist in the market, right? There's lots of players who have invested money to build yesterday's infrastructure and are, and I would say probably the biggest elephant in the room or the biggest barrier for thoughtful policy in this space is the cable industry.
Right.
Cable companies know that their systems can be replaced by fiber, and fiber will outpace whatever they can do, not just on speeds, but on price. And so long as they can hold that off for as many years as possible, they will remain the only choice for high-speed access. And
okay.
I'm sure all your listeners agree with that, in that if you wanted high-speed access, you're going to cable and nothing else, unless you have a fiber option.
Right, right. So that does, you know, call to mind one of the reasons that I've wanted to actually start having these discussions about the digital divide, because we've heard about the digital divide for so long. We've been talking about it for so long. And over the years, there has been a lot of funding that's been put toward universal broadband. And yet it feels like not a lot has changed. So I wonder if you could unpack that a little bit more and where the issue is there. Is that in the regulations themselves? Is it in what we're striving for with regard to quote-unquote universal broadband? Why, where has all that money gone?
So a lot of the problems we've run into stem from low expectations. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those low expectations are pushed by the industry that sells the slow internet access. You know, they'll argue it's too expensive to give people this kind of upgrade, this kind of infrastructure, these kind of investments. Whereas you can give us a fraction of the money and we can deliver whatever minimum speed you're asking for. You know, today that's 25 down and 3 up, which if you're hearing that number, you think that that's a useless speed for me today. You're right. For most part, that upload side of it, 3, doesn't handle most of the needs you have today. And, you know, they push these really low metrics because, one, they can meet them with the old wires and the old infrastructure. And two, they can do it on the cheap. So that kind of prevents the government rationalizing long-term large investments, multi-decade investments to not just, like, achieve a certain broadband speed and then we're kind of done with the digital divide, but actually eliminate the digital divide, make it a thing of the past like electricity and water.
Right. So the U.S. government is about to see a significant shift with Joe Biden as president and Democrats in control of Congress. So I'm wondering what you want to see from this administration and Congress on the fiber front and what you think might be potentially more possible now. And is there anything that is already in Congress, you know, whether passed by the House, installed in the Senate, or at least in progress that we could pass quickly to move forward with fiber?
So the Electronic Frontier Foundation is 100% on board with Majority Whip James Clyburn's legislation. It's called the Affordable Accessible Internet Act. Mm-hmm. And what that bill would do would, you know, effectively, you know, institute the national response necessary that we've seen in the past with electricity and water, and create a infrastructure program that would install broadband access at a 100 down, 100 up symmetrical low latency speed, which is essentially technical speak for fiber. You really can't deliver that in a realistic way without most, if not all, of that being fiber infrastructure. And you know, the program would spend, you know, $80 billion in infrastructure money on the front end, as well as a long term $40 billion loan program, kind of, again, similar to how we did electricity. And most estimates I have read indicate you can get up to the 98th, 99th percentile of coverage with that kind of investment. It's a huge amount of money. But here's the thing. We will never have to spend money on broadband infrastructure again after that. Not in my lifetime. You know, I'll be dead in the grave before we have to think about, you know, what's the next type of infrastructure we would have to do, you know, likely doubling up or tripling up the fiber infrastructure to keep up with demand. But that's like 22nd century kind of worries, right? So everything preceding that has always kind of tried to reach bare minimums on a very short time frame. And, you know, quite frankly, most of that has resulted in money, you know, kind of going in a pile and being set on fire. I mean, mm-hmm. much of this old infrastructure we've subsidized and propped up, and we're still doing today. We're still subsidizing 10-1 today in some places. With lots and lots of federal money, and all of that infrastructure that's being subsidized to deliver that kind of speed is useless. It's wasted investment. And that's kind of the danger. You know, if we do this wrong, we'll do it wrong by lowering the estimates and lowering the metrics and lowering what we want to achieve with kind of investments, versus really investing along a mindset of what is good for 2050, 2060, 2070 and beyond.
Okay, got it. And, you know, Congress did pass and the president signed relief packages this year, and some of the money in those packages went toward broadband projects. I'm wondering if you have any input on how those projects might be helping communities or not. Is it the same problem that we've just been creating over and over again? In particular, the CARES Act funded projects, I believe, needed to be completed by the end of 2020. So I'm just wondering what your perspective is on the effectiveness of the money from those bills and going toward broadband.
So the challenge here is, I think, everyone involved in the policymaking decision space here has to kind of confront this reality. The current approach has underinvested in lots of these parts of the country, not just in rural, but in mm-hmm. lots of parts of the urban market as well, for the better part of 10 to 15 years.
Right.
And we're not going to fix that in 3 to 6 months. Most of the construction timelines, I understand, is a 5-year or longer time range. So if we are spending money with the goal of do what you can to solve this in 3 months, we're basically talking about mobile hotspots and Wi-Fi and some real jerry-rigged solutions that will give you a temporary band-aid and will become not useful in a few years. Absolutely. And we have to do it. That's the reality of the pandemic. People need help right now, so we should help them. But we should also be thinking about, much like as now incoming President Biden has articulated, build back better. What does that mean in the broadband context? That means replacing the old infrastructure of the AT&T monopoly era of a century ago with the infrastructure for the next century. And China is already doing this. The EU is doing it across the board. Lots of parts of the Asian market is already doing this. And if the United States doesn't do it, we should not be surprised that the next Silicon Valley is in China and not here. We should not be surprised that there will be the next set of killer apps that require, gigabit symmetrical low latency speeds, right, and vast majority of Americans can't even touch them, right, and make use of them. These are things that are going to happen, and whether we're prepared to address them now so that we're ready in 10 years from now is really up to this Congress. And this is really the year to make this decision.
Yeah. Are you optimistic?
Very optimistic, actually. The Clyburn legislation I mentioned that really does a national fiber program, that already passed this House of Representatives. That already has a majority vote. The same members that voted in favor are there, and the majority of them are there. So this will get out of the House of Representatives again. I don't know what's the package and the plan, right? That's going to be up to leadership and the members of that Congress. But the past Senate, the last year's Senate, didn't even take it up in consideration. And quite frankly, if they're taking their cues from the cable industry, they're being told everything is fine. Nothing is wrong. We don't need to do anything out there. And that's obviously wrong. That's obviously wrong if you live out in the rest of the country here. And, I think the intention of build back better being the theme of this presidency means recovery across the board, not just on vaccinations, but what does our future economy look like, and what is our future healthcare system and education system, and all the things that require robust connectivity are going to be systemically addressed. I do think the will and the energy is there. And quite frankly, it's really kind of because the willingness to invest the necessary dollars is there. When we were confronted with a similar dynamic, and I was a House staffer back these years in 2009, during the financial collapse. So, the banks collapsed and the economy was in free fall and President Obama took office. We really didn't know exactly how much we needed to spend to really concretely end the digital divide, right? It was, nor did we have, I would say, a clear understanding of what's the right approach. You had lots of different types of technologies and the need for access in terms of the speeds you needed just wasn't as high as it is today. And so lots of different technologies kind of reached that, and there wasn't really a clear understanding of the limitations of some of the older networks. You even had talk of broadband over power line and stuff like that, and satellite was there. So we put $8 billion towards broadband, and quite frankly, the money that went towards fiber with that money, those networks still exist and they're still being used right now just fine. And the money that did it, not so well. And I think we just didn't appreciate the extent of the problem as well as the size of the government response needed to be to really bring it to a conclusion. And I think the appreciation is growing, obviously, now, given the fact that you would never have seen an $80 billion construction package on broadband come out of the House of Representatives absent the pandemic. Being understood by the pandemic has revealed is if your community has fiber already in the ground, your capacity to respond to the emergency is substantially better than if you lack it. Mm-hmm. So to give you two communities, right? There's school districts in Texas, for example, that has had to spend millions, 10 million plus on purchasing hotspots, mobile hotspots from like Verizon, for example, to just hand it out to these families to connect them. Meanwhile, if you look at Chattanooga, Tennessee, the EPB, which is their municipal ISP, which has fibered up the entire community, they have announced that they will give low-income families, 28,000 students, free internet for 10 years for a total cost of $8.2 million. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you think about that, I checked in with them to confirm, is $2 to $3 per student per month, like, what is that covering in your cost? And I had the strong suspicion that that's the exact cost of delivering data and what they delivered is 100 symmetrical, because it's very cheap to add people to the network in terms of your expenses, because they don't really impact your congestion and you can handle lots of traffic. And that's basically what it is. I mean, it's basically, if you wanted to give away free broadband at cost, if you have the fiber already in the ground, you can do it for very little money, $2 to $3 a month per kid. And for, $8 million for 10 years free internet at high speeds beyond what you need today is incredible.
Right.
Yeah. Similarly to, the recent package that passed the House and Senate at the end of the year, the emergency benefit program, right? The intention of there is to subsidize about $50, of your bill in terms of needing access. If you're a resident in San Francisco and you have access to this private company called Sonic, which does fiber to the home throughout the Bay Area, they sell it at $40 a month. So a $50 subsidy will give you free internet at a gigabit symmetrical because this fiber company is there. But if you're someone like myself who has only Comcast, I only have Comcast in my backyard here, I pay well over $100 for high-speed access. And so, sure, I'm not in need of the subsidy, but I imagine people in my footsteps, in my kind of community, that subsidy is nice. It helps, but it still means they have to pay a lot for a lot less. Right. And so this is an affordability crisis as well as a digital divide issue.
Absolutely.
If you have communities, and I guess the related problem to this, and something that EFF and many other groups are asking the new Biden FCC to address, is this issue of called digital redlining, right, where fiber is going to wealthy neighborhoods and avoiding low income neighborhoods. If we care about how do we get free internet and low cost internet to low income people who have limited means, particularly in the pandemic, and we're not thinking about how to create the infrastructure means of delivering that, we're missing the boat. And that's the one piece I want to kind of highlight is it's not just about speeds and not just about innovation and all the cool things you could do with the internet as it grows, but it is also about this concrete need to figure out how do we help people who can't afford even a dollar a month have a means of connecting to the internet to be a part of society as well. And fiber gives you that means.
Thank you so much, Ernesto Falcone, for joining me today to kick off our new series and for the important work you do on broadband policy. And thank you to our producer, Tian Fu, for making this episode. Stay tuned for more episodes of The Divide, and be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for additional interviews and insights from the team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.